This is the CIIS Public Programs Podcast, featuring talks and conversations recorded live by the Public Programs Department of California Institute of Integral Studies, a nonprofit university located in San Francisco on unceded Ramaytush Ohlone land. Every family has a story. For some of us, our family of origin is a solid foundation that feeds our confidence and helps us navigate life's challenges. For others, it's a source of pain, hurt, and conflict that can feel like a lifelong burden. Licensed therapist and best-selling relationship expert Nedra Glover Tawab is an expert in helping individuals reclaim their voice and set healthy boundaries. In her latest book, Drama Free, she offers clear advice for identifying dysfunctional family patterns and choosing the best path to breaking the cycle and moving forward. In this episode, Nedra is joined by writer, author, and licensed mental health professional Mina B in a conversation about understanding and moving past family struggles and living your life your way. This episode was recorded during a live online event on May 23rd, 2023. You can also watch it on the CIIS Public Programs YouTube channel. A transcript is available at ciispod.com. To find out more about CIIS and public programs just like this one, visit our website, ciis.edu, and connect with us on social media at CIIS Pub Programs.
Hi, Nedra.
Hi, Mina. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for asking.
Of course. Well, I am so excited to have this conversation with you. And I know the audience is really eager to learn more about your work. And I just want to go ahead and jump right in if we can. And so in your book, Drama Free, one of the things I loved is how you broke down your work into three different parts. So unlearning dysfunction, healing, and growth. And the unlearning dysfunction piece really stood out to me because I often think about the concept of learning and unlearning. And also as a therapist, I know you can relate to the concept of someone saying to you, but this is how I was raised, Nedra. This is all I've known my whole life. And when I think of that thing, it also makes me think of how we tie that back to our culture. So not only do we see it as I was raised like this in my family, but even culturally, we all do the same thing. And so I'm curious to hear from you, what are some examples of traditions or cultural practices that you've seen people engage in that they disguise it as something that's normal when really it is dysfunctional and healthy, but we're disguising it as culture and tradition?
I think multi-generations of dysfunction. I've seen a lot of families where people have issues with their parents and their parents had issues with their parents and so on and so forth. And it just goes on and on and on. And it's the norm. It's like, you know, my mom and my grandmother don't talk, or this part, like estrangement sometimes can be a dysfunction when it is a way of communication throughout your family. Also, I would say that not allowing people to share any emotions or holding space for people during difficult times. In some families, there is no conversation about how you feel or what's happening. Everything could be made into a joke, or, you know, it could be dismissed. I've even seen that sometimes. I think in the book, I use an example of, you know, me witnessing a dismissal of feelings at a funeral of all places, right? Where someone was, you know, crying and, you know, they were told, man up. And this is at a funeral. So, you know, I think that dysfunction is not just like substance abuse or physical abuse. It's also emotional neglect. It is also codependency. It is also not honoring boundaries. And it can also be not apologizing when you've done something wrong to someone. Mm. So there is a variety of things that we can perpetually do in families that are harmful to many individuals. Speaking of not apologizing, I was speaking with someone earlier today and they were saying this person never apologizes to anyone about anything. And I'm like, oh, what a horrible reputation to have. Like, You're a person who doesn't apologize for anything. And whenever you do something, you expect this automatic forgiveness. You want to step back into the role with the person without conversation, without change, and without ownership. Wow.
Wow, indeed. Wow. And I, you know, you're bringing up something that I would love to hear your perspective on, because when we are talking about this concept of dysfunction, right, I think it can be easy to look around and see the dysfunction, but not look within and recognize the ways you participate in the dysfunction and you uphold the dysfunction. And so I'm curious to know, like, how can people start to become more self-aware about the fact that maybe you are the problem in the family? Maybe you are the dysfunctional family member. Maybe that chapter was actually about you and you're reading it and you're like, oh, this could be applied to my mother. But then it's like, also, well, how about you do some introspection here and see, well, maybe you also have some qualities and traits here. How do we get people to open their eyes to see the role that they are also playing in this concept?
They have to have a desire to do that, right? Like, there are some people who really own the victim space. And no matter how much they're repeating the same thing in relationships, they feel as if they've been wrong. There are some people who refuse to see themselves because it's easier and it's softer in their spirit to say it's this other person. But I often think, if you have the same issue with multiple people, it's got to be you. It's impossible that it's everybody else. So if you want to notice, gosh, could it be me? One significant indicator of that is seeing the same problems over and over. If you say, everybody I know is so selfish, how? Family members, friends, like, how are you picking, attracting, gravitating towards this type of personality trait? Maybe it's not something that you want, but it's certainly something that you've welcomed. So even that is about you. If every relationship's in this explosive way, then there is something to be said about how you end relationships. And perhaps, you know, we are contributing to some things, and it is really important for us to think about, like, what is my role in this? How did I contribute to this? Even when it is someone else's fault, I think about, you know, like, if you're setting a boundary with someone and when you set it and they get really mad about it, it's like, you know what, they're upset? You've been letting them do this for 8 years. So even this is on me.
Like, it's true.
I don't need to let anybody else get away with something for 8 years. Of course they would be mad. Of course I made them feel like this is okay. And now today, on the 8th year, 14th day of our relationship, I am saying, hey, I don't like this thing. And they are shocked. So even that is on me. So there's a lot of ownership in some of the things that we're experiencing in relationships. I deeply believe in some people, they just don't get it. But there is also some cause and effect that we don't tend to pay attention to.
You know, it makes me think about the concept of community care, which is what my work is deeply rooted in. And I love how you weave that in, because ownership plays a big role in cultivating connection. Who is going to want to be in relationship with you if you are the person who can never apologize? If you are the person who everyone is to blame, but I'm perfect. I have no flaws. There is nothing wrong with me. And I think it's what you're speaking to is just so important when we think about the concept of collective care, even around what you're just describing in boundaries. For 8 years, I've been this way. And the moment a person gives me pushback, oh, I'm cutting them off. I'm ending this relationship. And it's like, what happened to having compassion as well as compromise and flexibility in our relationships, especially with our family, when we are trying to be that person to bring something new into a pattern that has existed, like you talked about, it existed with my mom, it existed with grandma, it existed with her. So now I want to do something different. But the moment I get this slight pushback that leads to a feeling of discomfort, everybody is getting pushed out. And so can you talk to us about that cutoff culture, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we, especially with us living in a loneliness pandemic and thinking about what it means to be in community, accountability and restorative justice is a part of that. And I think sometimes when we think of our family, we tend to be very swift to remove ourselves and push those people away without figuring out, how can I be more compassionate? How can I be more flexible? How can I realize maybe this person, no is a complete sentence, but with this person, because I want a genuine connection with you, maybe I'll offer you a courtesy and explain more. But I think sometimes people struggle with having that nuance. And so can you talk about that, like just having more nuance in our relationships and learning to engage in that framework of accountability and being able to be in a space where we allow people to evolve? I know you talk about that so much versus being so quick to cut them off.
I do believe we're seeing not necessarily more cutoffs, but it's more on social media, it's more in the press, people are more vocal about it. I would wonder if estrangements have actually risen, or if we're just more aware of estrangements. I spoke with Dr. Carl Palamore, and he mentioned in his research that people leave relationships because of anxiety. Mm-hmm. That is the number one reason. They're anxious about talking to this person, being around them, communicating with them in any way. They've had several situations with them. And that is what's leading to estrangement. It's not anger. It's not being hurt. It's not somebody taking something and not returning it. It is really just, I've tried. And I am now to the point where I'm so uncomfortable around you because I've tried and I just can't try anymore. Or I'm tired of you being yourself without apology, or being yourself and being offensive, being yourself and harming other people. In those instances, I don't think we're seeing an increase in estrangements and cutoffs. What we may be seeing an increase in is people not wanting to have uncomfortable conversations and ending relationships, right? So I think there may be an increase in ghosting. I think there is a bit of an increase in abruptly ending a relationship without talking to people. And I can get that, you know, as a from a therapeutic perspective and from a personal perspective, there are some people who can make you feel so uncomfortable talking to them. And it comes out in how they respond to other things, the past situations you've had with them, the conversations they say about how other people talk to them about stuff. So we can get a sense of, oh, I can't say this to this person. Like, if I say this, they will cuss me out and stalk me for 2 years because that's what they did to this other person. Do I want to be that? that happens. It's really unfortunate. And then there are some times where we are just really ready to leave a relationship. We don't want to have to explain it. We don't want to comfort the other person. We don't want you to try to get back in the relationship. We are so sure of it. You know, because you wear blue shirts, I'm out of here. And there's nothing you can do to keep me because I just don't want to be around a person with blue shirts or whatever it is, right? And that is tough. That is really tough. And I think we are dealing with more people suffering the grief of relationships not ending on their terms. Yeah. And for that, I would say there has to be some space for grieving. We have to allow people to go. We have to allow people to want to leave. We have to allow people to not always like us. I don't know about you, but you know, feeling unliked by someone is a really tough feeling, especially when you like them.
Yeah. Yep.
And so there is some difficulty in someone cutting you off or ending a relationship because of your behavior. Because guess what? There are other people in your life who still have a relationship with you, even though you exhibit that behavior. You know, I've heard parents say, I wouldn't talk to this person if they weren't my child, but I don't see why they, you know, their brother don't want to talk to them. It's like, well, so you wouldn't talk to this person if it wasn't your child, you know? So we have to think about that sometimes. Not everyone is a nice person. Not everyone is welcoming, inviting. Some of us don't know how to be good friends. Some of us don't know how to be good sisters or brothers or parents. We just don't have the skills. And when that is the case, people are now, in some cases, brave enough to step up and say, I don't want this relationship. I don't want to argue with you every time I see you. You say that is you, I'm scared of confrontation, and to me, that's aggressive. So, you know, there is this accommodating and dancing we have to do with another person we're in a relationship with. And sometimes when the other person is not willing, it can end a relationship. I think you can be authentic and you can be yourself, but there are some parts of you that you need to be 70% of and some parts that can be 100. It depends on the person, place, the setting. And if you find yourself having to go too low, you know, maybe you don't need to speak with this person as frequently. I am an advocate of maybe not speaking to people as frequently. I support a cutoff. I support a cutoff. I support an estrangement. And I also support us not trying to force closeness in our relationships. You can have a relationship with a person and talk to them once a month, quarterly, every Christmas. That's a relationship. That's our norm.
It is.
I don't need to speak to you every day, 5 times a week for us to have a relationship. No, we can have a relationship as needed. And all of that is based off of how we connect to each other, how we respect each other, what our boundaries look like. If I'm anxious when I see you, are you willing to hear that and hold space for that? Can we accommodate each other's needs? There's a lot in there that we have to think about in terms of frequency. What I will hear from most people is we want the frequency to be regular. And if it can't be regular, we don't want it at all. If I can't have an absolutely healthy relationship with so-and-so and I talk to them every day, you might be talking to them too much. There are some people you talk to them too much. And that too much is when you start to get annoyed. But you'll find if you talk to them once a month, the conversation is very different. So when you want to be in relationship with someone, it's really this figuring out how the relationship could work, what sort of things we can talk about, what sort of things we don't need to talk about, what boundaries need to exist, and all of those things.
I love that. It makes me think about how people are so hungry for connection sometimes that they assume that every relationship has to be, you're my best friend, we're confidants, you belong in my circle of intimacy. And I love what you're speaking to because it plays a role in the work I do with helping people remember our circle of support and how it ranges from a circle of intimacy to a circle of friendship. And friendship also falls on the spectrum. And then even having a circle of participation where maybe I chat with this person because we have we're mothers and we have that in common. And so we hang out after mommy and me group, but that's the only time we chat. right? And then in my family, you know, maybe this is just the cousin that I see at the cookout, and that's all right. We kiki and we laugh and we get along at the cookout, but I don't have to invite them over for dinner every Saturday because maybe we just don't have that close connection. And I just love that you're framing it that way, because I think, again, going back to this epidemic we're in around loneliness, I think often people strive for their family to be their closest connection. And we're biologically wired for that. So it makes sense. But I do think that what you're speaking to allows us to recognize that we can have healthier relationships if we allow people to be who they are and we meet them where they are and we assess, well, how do you fit into my life? And maybe it is too overwhelming for me to talk to you every day. And so that once a month check-in is enough to sustain me and sustain this relationship, or else we might have conflict, or else we might just not get along. And so what I also hear you talking to though, Nedra, is the sense of empowerment and the sense of choice. And I think that often in this line of work, I'm sure you can relate. And I think you did an Instagram post on this recently where people will say, well, that's easier said than done. That's easier said than done, Nedra. It was easy for you to write that out, but practicing it, I can't do hard things. Mm-hmm. How do we help people get out of this victimhood? How do we help people shift those? Well, first, what are some mental roadblocks that keep people in a state of victimhood? And how can people learn to now become more resilient and recognize that they are not powerless people? And as you state in your book, you have choice, right? And so when things are happening outside of your control, what does it look like for you to look inward and say, well, I can control this thing, but it does take resilience and it takes confidence to be able to have that type of perspective. So can you walk people through what those mental roadblocks look like that keeps them in that state of victimhood, and how can they start to shift that?
It's that statement that you mentioned, it's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. Other people have more resources to be able to do certain things. I think about when Michelle Obama, when her husband was in the White House and, you know, she woke up every day and went and worked out and all of these things. And here I am, you know, making an excuse, not being the first lady, not having as many responsibilities. I can't get on the Bowflex for 10 minutes. I can't find the time. It's easier said than done to work out. And you got this woman, the first lady of the United States, waking up at 5 a.m., reading briefs, getting kids off to school, going to 42 meetings, sitting down.
Yep.
How dare I? Mm-hmm. You know what I have to acknowledge? I don't want to make time for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want that level of commitment.
Right. Right. You are speaking the truth. It's the commitment.
It's the commitment. I don't want to do that. I just want the result. I don't want the practice of the result. And so sometimes what I think we really get lost in, we don't want any practice and process. All we want is outcome. And if we can't immediately get outcome, that is too hard. I do it too. I say it too. I'm sure you have some things you say it around, but it's like, that's too hard. When I see certain things, I'm like, oh, I could never. And it's like, at the end of the day, I have to admit that I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to, or I'm not as committed to that thing as that person is, or maybe I don't want what it takes to get there. I just want the thing. And when you're thinking of relationships, when you're thinking of, you know, saying things to people, or, you know, just the different things we have to do in relationships to be in long-term relationships, have conversations with people, correct them when they are wrong about us. Say so. It's like, oh, it's easier said than done to say something to somebody when they say something, you know, mean to you. Or you'll keep dealing with it.
Yeah.
You know, the thing on the opposite side of that is if you don't do anything about it, it will always be a problem. And that's where I gain a lot of empowerment. Don't want this to forever be a problem. We're very solution focused. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my work is teaching people, what is the solution and how do you implement it?
Right.
If the solution is your mom is always saying things to upset you about how you raise your kids, what do you think we can do about that? And it saying it's easier said than done is no work. You've done no work. You've not even tried.
Right.
So what does the trying look like? What is the practice of getting a person to not say certain things to you about your parenting? What is the process of that look like? It's going to look like her maybe being upset. It's going to look like, and so there's a, we want the outcome. We want the result without any practice and process. That is what keeps us in that victimhood, because it's like, I'm not controlling any of this. All of this stuff is happening. I don't know why it's happening. I'll just see what happens. People don't get it. When people are doing mean things to you, or they're saying things in a certain way, they think it's okay because they aren't mean people. They just, this is how they speak. This is how they talk. So when they say these things, they're speaking in a way that they know how. So if you want them to say something different, do something different, show up for you in a different way, often we have to ask. We have to say things to people that are maybe very hard for them to hear. Mm-hmm. I was speaking with someone who was saying that they removed someone from their invite list for parties. And the person said, hey, why didn't you invite me? And he said, because you never show up. How long do you want to be on a list? Now, if I have a party and 15 people could come, you think I'm going to invite you and you don't show up? I'm going to give that invite to a dependable person. Invite to you. You are now off the list. And that person can be upset. They can feel whatever they need to feel. But the truth of it is, you are saving space for people who could show up in your life, and that's not a bad thing. So really getting into your life takes a whole lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage, a lot of practice, and a deep willingness to be in the process. Mm. It is not easy. I don't want you to think anything is easy. I'm a reformed nail biter, so I know that stuff is not easy. I'm looking at my nails every day. Oh, how hard it is to not just bite my little nail. You know, like, it's not easy. It's not easy, but it's possible.
It's possible.
It's possible with practice.
Exactly. And it makes me think of practice requires us to keep trying. Because even in the examples you shared, when you said like, well, this person responded that way, and so we shut down and we say, I can't try again. Mm-hmm. Or that next person I want to communicate with, well, that person responded this way. So we start carrying our history into new relationships instead of practicing how to continuously show up in these relationships. And I have a question that I don't think it's too much of a pivot, but I kind of want to talk about communication really quickly because, and I'm curious to know your perspective on this. Mm-hmm. Doing this work around boundaries, doing this work on really helping people build communication, one of the things I find is boundaries can somewhat be a societal issue because I think collectively people are used to watered down language. They are used to things being sugarcoated. They are used to indirect language so badly that when someone says to you, like you use your example, no, you're not invited to the event. Oh my God. It literally, when you are saying something in a direct manner, it becomes this form of offense because it shows that we are so used to either lying to each other or let's keep it real, right? We're so used to lying to people and being fed those lies, or we struggle just with deeply hearing the truth, no matter how honest and compassionate it is. And mm-hmm. I think this can apply in our dysfunctional homes, but even just thinking about dysfunctional relationships, often a lot of your work touches upon the fact that communication is required if mm-hmm. we want to change cycles. But it just makes me think of this culture of it being so hard to communicate for some people because they're used to a style of communication that is so indirect, they don't realize they're stripping themselves of their power and their agency and their autonomy. And they're also conflating things that leaves them deeply wounded when someone was just simply trying to be honest with you to invite in more connection and further this relationship, which is why I told you my boundary was no, and you're having this reaction to me, right? And so I'm just curious to know, I don't even know if I have a question in that, but just your thoughts around communication and direct communication and compassionate communication, but being open to hearing direct communication.
Is it okay if I do a personal share here?
Yes, of course.
Okay. I recently had a party where I could invite a small amount of people. This is not me from the other example. Okay. But I could invite a small amount of people. And I did not invite a family member who I don't talk to this person. I think I talked to them once last year. And because it was a small amount of people, I thought about, you know, the people I speak to most frequently, the people who I speak to, you know, and have like these wonderful, delightful conversations with. So those are the people I invited. And it got back to me that this person was really upset that they weren't invited. And I was shocked. It's like, really? They talk to them. That's the first thing I said. I don't even talk to this person. Not in a bad way, but just like, I literally don't talk to this person on a regular basis. So if you tell me, hey, you can only invite this amount of people, I never thought to invite them. I've not invited them to many other things. So it's interesting. And so I called them. And I said, hey, I hear you're upset, but they were so shocked that I called. Oh my gosh, you didn't have to call me. I said, well, I did because I heard that you were upset. And I don't want that to be the energy between us because I really have no issue with you. I literally didn't send you an invite because I haven't talked to you in a year. I haven't talked to you. And so it's not that I wouldn't want you there if we had a different type of relationship. It's really that I invited the people that I talk to on a regular and consistent basis. Yeah. So there's not any animosity, any anger, or anything like that between you and I. We just don't have a certain type of relationship. And, you know, she thanked me. She said, you know, I hadn't even considered that. Like I was really, you know, I just, you know, it kind of hurt my feelings. I said, I know it feels really sucky to be left out of something, right? Like I can understand that, but I just want you to know that you weren't left out intentionally. It wasn't a thought that crossed my mind. So like, what do you think about it? You know, and so I think sometimes with communication, it could be really hard because you have to deal with what I contributed, which was, you're right, I didn't. Oops. But also, do we need to be working on a closer relationship if you want some invites?
Right.
So there is something for both of us in this. You know, it's not just on me, but we have to be willing to have those conversations because it is awkward. She was shocked that I called, but you were already talking about it with other people. So I was going to let it go, but I said, you know what? This is 2023, Nedra. Let me call her. So there has to be a willingness to sit in discomfort in conversations with people who you know you care about, you love. They want to maybe improve the relationship. They're willing to, apologize or say something. I think there are some people who are deeply offensive, mm-hmm. deeply defensive. Also, people who can demean you when you have something to say. You know, that could have went a different way. I could have called somebody else. You know, I know a few people. If I would have called them about that, they would have cussed me out.
Mm. I know people like that too.
They would have cussed me out. You just like, oh. But I said, this is a reasonable person. This is a person that I can speak with about this thing. How wonderful that we have people who can really hear those things. The thing that, you know, deters us from having those boundary conversations or even communicating a mishap, a mistake, or, you know, a shift in a relationship is really those people who don't know how to tolerate the discomfort of things not always going their way. When you say no to them and I can't believe it's like, whoa, like just like you have the opportunity to choose how you show up in the world, what you want in your life, and how you use your time, money, resources, and everything else, I have the opportunity as well. And if I say no, if I say I don't like this, I have the power to do that just as you have the power to do that.
Right.
And a lot of it is, it's not always what we say, because I've heard people speak boundaries in a very pleasant way. I had a woman DM me and she said, I love set boundaries, find peace, but you need to teach people to speak boundaries in a kind way. I said, what are you talking about? I usually don't respond to a lot of DMs, but I just had to know, what are you talking about? I recommended your book to my daughter-in-law. She thought the book was so good, she recommended it to her daughter-in-law. And her daughter-in-law set a boundary with her and she did it unkindly. So now I'm hooked. I'm like, what did she say? The daughter-in-law asked her, please call before you come by our house.
You can't make this stuff up.
She didn't yell. She didn't scream. So the woman went on to say, it's my son's house. I've been coming over to your house all this time. Like she was just, it wasn't the way the daughter-in-law said it. It was just that she said it. She didn't roll her neck. She didn't point her finger. She read, set about a book you recommended her because apparently she needed some boundaries.
Right.
So she read the book that you suggested. And she said, oh my gosh, I've got to set this boundary with my mother-in-law. And so instead of you honoring the boundary, you've told me to amend the book. She said, can you add another chapter where people cannot say, call before you come over to me?
Wow.
I was just like, well, at that point, I just stopped going back and forth. I said, oh, wow. There was nothing wrong with what this girl did, but just the simple fact that somebody would have the audacity to ask you to call before you visit.
Mm.
Oh. I want to be in my relationship. So, I mean, I want to be in my relationship so deep and tough. Please tell me if it's something you need to do, say, not do, show up as, whatever it is. I want to know because that's how much I love my people.
Yes.
I want to do all the things. So if you need Nedra to call before she comes, let me know. Okay, I'm gonna do it. Me the baby.
I'm outside.
I'm up the street. No, not a good time. Bye.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It's also like, I'm going to recommend you this book because you need boundaries, but just don't set any with me.
Don't set any with me. We have to become better at dealing with discomfort. Instead of dealing with our discomfort, what we tend to do is try to make other people never make us uncomfortable.
Yes, yes.
Don't say this to me. Don't do this to me. Make sure you say yes to everything. As long as I want you at my party, stay at my party. Whenever I want you to buy me something. It's like, if they can't do everything that we want them to do, oh no, they a problem. They are now a problem because you can't make me uncomfortable. You can't make me feel like I have to, you know, ask for something. You can't make me feel like I said something the wrong way. You can't make me feel like I didn't support you. I think that's information in relationships, though. Mm. And maybe I feel that way, you know, because I'm open to it.
Yeah.
When my kids tell me you're not listening, I'm like, shoot, what? Okay, what was it? Because you're right.
Yeah.
That's why we got half the story. You're right. You're correct. I'm not gonna try to convince you you're right. I was listening. Girl, let me put on my listening ears because I was trying to listen to a podcast too. So let me get it together and really listen. You know, when people say things about you, sometimes it has value.
Yes.
And it can really deepen a relationship if you listen to it and just get out of your feelings enough to apply it. Mm. But when people have to dance around your feelings, they can't say anything to you.
Yeah.
And that's a whole lot of us. We can't be spoken to. You know, when I see people acting a certain way that's like, oh, this really don't fit the environment, I know that they have a lot of people in their life that cannot talk to them. It's like, oh, you can't be spoken to. That's why you acting like this.
Right.
Because no one can say anything to you. Everybody has to pretend like what you're doing is okay, how you show up in the world is okay. No one wants to correct you. Because you've made it so uncomfortable for them to do so. It is really important that we strive to be correctable.
And that is what community care is. And it makes me think of how are we taking ownership of our lives when we feel lonely? Mm-hmm. And saying, well, maybe it's possible you don't have the connections you want because everything that you just said right now, you mm-hmm. make it hard for people to want to be in relationship with you. And that is why you're struggling with relationships.
Yeah.
That is why a lot of us are lonely. A lot of us think we're operating with expectations, but we're operating through the lens of entitlement. Mm-hmm. I like to look at expectations as desires that I have around what it means to be in relationship with me. And so this is how I want to be spoken to. This is what it looks like to show up for me. But a demand is you do what I say, you act the way I desire. And there is no ands, ifs, or buts. There is no talk back. How dare you say that you can't support me in this moment and at the drop of a dime and come over when I tell you I need support. And I bring that up because I shared an Instagram post recently on ways you can respond to someone who says that they are not okay. And I gave some different scripts. And in one of the scripts, I shared language around like, you know, I'm really sorry that you're going through this right now. Is it okay if I call you back later at X time? Because right now I'm unavailable. Mm-hmm. And there were so many people in the comments that literally said, if my friend doesn't drop everything they're doing and get in their car and race to me when I say I'm not okay, I don't need that kind of friendship. And I was just like, where does this entitlement come from where we are forgetting about the lives and the needs of the people we want to be in relationship with? Mm-hmm. So even when people are trying to accommodate us, that's not enough. Because when I'm in a crisis, that's urgent. So you better drop everything for me. When I'm uncomfortable, that's urgent. So you better start people pleasing and give me the thing that I desire, you know? And it just makes me think about how you, I'll pivot a little because I really want people to have those practices on building their chosen family. You know, we talked earlier about estrangement, or is it just ghosting, or is it just the discomfort, right? But I'm thinking about people who are like, you know what, Nedra, I've done a lot of the things you shared. I realize I want this relationship with this person. I've tried, I've done the work, and they're really harmful. And I really want to start building my circle of support, but I want to make sure I'm mindful that I am not redeveloping patterns in building these new relationships. I also want you to talk, however, Nedra, to dating. Because when we think of dysfunctional families, I also think it's important for us to think of how we may recreate dysfunctional families with the people we choose to partner with, right? And so I want to know, whether it be in a friendship, building our community, but even developing a romantic relationship, so that we are not recreating dysfunction in these new relationships. What are some things that we should look out for? What are some things that are red flags? What really defines a healthy relationship?
For people from dysfunctional families, I always think of, does this seem familiar? Does the way that a person makes you feel, does the way that they speak to you, is that familiar? And if it feels familiar, maybe it's something to look out for when you've had dysfunctional relationships. Very early on, we can see who people are, and we have to move away from really liking someone's cologne or perfume and more towards deeper things like values, connection, common interests, communication, boundaries, and so many other things. I am often shocked when I see couples and we go through their meeting story, and it's like, it was so traumatic in the beginning. It's like, wait a minute, you guys are married? Yeah, I'm married with all of that stuff that happened in the first month, in the first year, because you're seeing stuff with people. And because sometimes it is us wanting to be in a relationship more than we want to be in a healthy relationship. Right. Sometimes it is us wanting to be married more than we want to be married long term. And so you have to think about the goals of your romantic partnership. If my goal is to have a sustainable relationship with someone, I'm going to date different. I'm going to be looking for, okay, is this person communicating? When I said this, how did they respond to it? Where are they being emotionally unavailable? When I challenge them on that, how do they respond to it? How do they accept feedback? What do they do when I present a boundary? How do I respond when they present a boundary? These are all things we find out in the courting period that we need to pay attention to. It's not anything that we need to just bypass because we enjoy this person's company. You can enjoy a lot of folks' company. You can enjoy your own company. And sometimes that can be more peaceful than getting into another toxic relationship for the sake of being in a relationship. And so when you come with, you know, some of those things that you're familiar with, it can be a key up for, you know, maybe this is some past stuff. I will say, you know, it can always be healthy to run some things past a therapist, because sometimes I've seen it where people are like, concerned about stuff that's actually pretty healthy. The person wants to see you every day. You don't want them to see you. The person wants to communicate with you. And you're like, oh, they're always trying to talk about. Okay, so you don't want to talk about stuff. So there are times when, because of our history, we can block out some of those very good things. We're not just taking out the good bacteria, we're taking out all the bacteria. And so now we're creating a whole nother problem where we can't date anybody who is of use because we're like, oh my gosh, this is so weird. This feels boring. This is like, you know, it feels too normal. I once heard someone say, we have too much in common. What?
As a bad thing?
I heard of this. It's like we're the same person. I said, listen, opposites attract, but what they do not do is stick together long term. You want somebody who y'all both feel this way about family, y'all both, and I'm not talking about hobbies and stuff. Those opposite things don't matter. But in terms of our values, how we communicate, our connection, those things are so important. So if you feel like you're too much like somebody, you want to argue? Because that's what I'm hearing. You need more chaos because you think that's loving to be like, to have some combat in a relationship and not be able to just sit on a couch and, oh, we both like this movie. You want to fight about what movie to watch? You want to fight about where to go eat, how to raise kids. Those things are not actually loving. That is re-traumatizing. That is just a repeat of chaos. And sometimes we don't know that, right? We feel like, well, that's what you do in relationships. No. That's not what you do in healthy relationships. That might be what you do in a relationship where you're repeating a pattern that's unhealthy.
Everything that you just said, you know, is just so, so important. And I think when thinking of, just challenging that dysfunction, it just makes me think of really of how important it really is to have our values in order and the healing that it takes. And I love that you shared the idea of even sometimes you have to bring this stuff to a therapist because we are so used to chaos. And I hear it all the time where people will say, this relationship is boring. And when you ask what's boring about it, it's like, oh, they want to talk all the time. They want to be around me all the time. They're so affectionate. They're always doing this. And it's like, what is making you so resistant to that thing? And it's probably because you never had it. You don't know what to do with it. You have no idea what to do with this thing. And I just think that it's so important for people to use what you're teaching us today in our lives to also recognize that victimhood piece and our choice in who we invite in our life. Because it also makes me think of that this idea when people say, I'm always attracting this person. I'm always attracting this person. And I always say to them, well, who are you pushing away? Right? In the midst of you inviting, because that's what it is. You're attracting all kinds of people. You make a choice to invite certain people into your life. So what does it look like to examine the traits of the people that you push away and why? What is there that you're actually running from that makes you say, I'm going to choose them instead of that other person, and then saying, oh, I have a type. This person is always attracting me. And it's like, but you just turned down. Look at who you just turned down, right?
I have a type too. My type is nice. I love me some nice people. Like, friend, a type of cashier, a type of family member. Just be nice, be kind, be respectful, own your stuff. Yeah, we should have a type. Our type shouldn't be, I like somebody who rough around the edge. Okay, well, you have fun with that. You have those edges. So it's possible for us to have a type, but those things need to be healthy things. Those things don't need to be things that are tough to figure out. And, you know, really in relationships, we get better at relationships with practice. None of us start off with impeccable skills. You know, we start off as the most, so, you know, kids, they're so selfish. They're not thinking about other people. You have to teach them, like, say hi to that person. Oh, I'm supposed to say hi? Hi. You know, so you're teaching people how to be in relationship. Like, we're still learning.
Yeah.
So it's not that, you know, we're terrible people and we want to be in these bad relationships. Sometimes we don't even know what we're doing to attract the same thing over and over. And most of the time it's looking for the same thing. You know, I've heard people describe their type to me, and it's like, you have a type of person that's just not going to be a good person to you. Mm. You've described the worst qualities on a personality test.
Yeah.
Like, let's look at a personality test. You've picked all the worst qualities a person can have. You have mastered the recipe for an unhealthy person. So, you know, sometimes we have to get out of our type.
Yeah.
We have to get out of our type, and we have to get into what we want long term.
Yeah.
It may not come in the package that you want it to come in. It may not present in the exact way. You know, I find sometimes with people who have unhealthy family relationships, they will meet a nice partner. And when that partner comes from a healthy family, that is so uncomfortable sometimes for a person from a dysfunctional family, because they're like, why are they having these gatherings? Why are the parents calling? Why is it like, you didn't have this stuff, but guess what? It's so healthy. Is not problematic, is not enmeshed. This is what a healthy relate, not sometimes it'd be enmeshed, but you know, this can be what a healthy relationship looks like. And we can't discard that because it's not what we had.
Yes. Yes. Everything that you're saying is just so important. And in the grand scheme of all of this, it makes me think about the people who are really taking in everything that you're saying now, or maybe they have been digesting it from your work on Instagram, even in your books, and they're recognizing, man, I've messed up.
Mm-hmm.
I have been dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. I have been that toxic friend. I have been that unhealthy partner. Where do I go from here? How do I start doing the work of making amends? So can you just give people insight to that process of what repair looks like?
You go to the person with accountability and with that ownership. You speak to them about what you directly did that you know of, because there may be some other things that you're not aware of.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to allow them to speak to you about how you've shown up in their life. And the biggest way to apologize to a person and really to repair is to do better. Going forward, you have to practice new behaviors, and you have to practice those new behaviors consistently. Because if you are your old self, that is a problem. You can't go to a person with an apology and say, oh my gosh, I apologize for, you know, this thing I did, or I apologize for how I was at such and such time, and not change that. It's really important for repair that you change who you are. You show them something different. There is, you know, there are some people in your life who will ignore it. There are some people in your life who will allow you to show up in any kind of way that you want to show up. And then there are others who demand accountability. They want you to show up and say, you know what? What I did was wrong. I think the biggest challenge is no one wants to be the person who has done a bad thing to another person. That's why we don't acknowledge it. Like, mm-hmm. No one wants to be the person that acknowledges that, gosh, I did take advantage of you. Like, can you imagine? Like, that's really hard to acknowledge. I took advantage of you. It's really hard to acknowledge I was not the best parent for you. I was jealous of you. You know, these are hard, really hard things to say to a person, but I promise you that in saying them, you are creating a healthier relationship. That is what the relationship needs, because often when we do something to other people, we want to go back to the relationship without apology. without ownership. We just want them to get over it and we want to go on to the next day. And that is the piece with the cutoffs. If we go back to that, I just see that not working anymore for people. I think that way of showing up after you've done these big things, it's just not working anymore. It used to be a great strategy where people could like flip out on you on Friday and call you on Sunday. It just doesn't work anymore. Now people are like, you flipped out on me on Friday. You're out of here, buddy. You got to call me and say, hey, I'm sorry I flipped out on you on Friday. I'm calling you to make amends. So I'm seeing a lot more cutoffs where someone has actually did something and they won't repair it, which is super sad because it's like, oh my gosh, this is your brother. It's your best friend. It's your dad. We all mess up. But if you're unwilling to repair it, this won't be the only relationship you lose. There will be others. There will be others because repairing is a wonderful people skill.
Yeah. I love that, Nedra. Nedra, this conversation was so refreshing and amazing and nourishing. I know if I feel this way, I can't imagine how people who tuned in tonight feel. So thank you, Nedra, so much for your work, for your wisdom, for sharing it with us. I am grateful for it, and I'm sure this community is grateful for it as well. So I want to thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the CIIS Public Programs Podcast. Our talks and conversations are presented live in San Francisco, California. We recognize that our university's building in San Francisco occupies traditional, unceded Ramaytush Ohlone lands. If you are interested in learning more about Native lands, languages, and territories, the website native-land.ca is a helpful resource for you to learn about and acknowledge the Indigenous land where you live. Podcast production is supervised by Kirsten Van Cleef at CIIS Public Programs. Audio production is supervised by Lyle Barrere at Desired Effect. The CIIS Public Programs team also includes Izzy Angus, Kyle DiMedio, Alex Elliott, Emlyn Guinea, Patty Fort, and Nikki Rhoda. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe wherever you find podcasts, visit our website, ciis.edu, and connect with us on social media at CIIS Pub Programs. CIIS Public Programs commits to use our in-person and online platforms to uplift the stories and teachings of Black, Indigenous, and other people of color, those in the LGBTQIA+ community, and all of those whose lives emerge from the intersections of multiple identities.